I really enjoyed doing the podcast yesterday with Jeff Jarvis, and I plan to do a bunch more like that, interviews with people that I listen to and respect and have known for a long time. And I expect great things from Jeff Jarvis, and so let's talk about the great things we're all going to do. And that's sort of going to be the theme of this podcast as we go forward. I've done this kind of thing before. In 2008 or 2009, I interviewed a lot of different people. I ended up doing an interview with Jay Rosen, and we had left so much unsaid that we decided to do it the next week too, and then the week after that, and we kept going for a few years actually, and we created a new podcast called Rebooting the News. Jay and I largely see the world the same way, but from completely different points of view. And we're also very different types of people. So I think it made an interesting podcast. And I'm told so by the people that were listening to it. So I want to talk a little bit about the decision. A rule that was offered by the Supreme Court. And a rule by the Supreme Court can't be litigated. It's just, this is it. It's the last word. And it was a very surprising last word. And for everybody that pays attention to it, I have to say, I can't think of any exceptions. It is a 180-degree turn for the United States of America. It's basically undoing everything that was resetting to before the American Revolution, actually. It's like, forget about the rest of it. The only thing, I wouldn't say the only thing. They haven't reinstated slavery, as far as I know. And that was a big thing for the court after the Civil War. And they haven't taken away the women's right to vote, but they have offered a special kind of slavery to women. And so to say that they haven't undone all those rules too, it's kind of subject to debate as to whether or not they've done that. And so I read a book, I want to tell you, by Eli Mystal, Mystal, and it was in many ways the most influential book that I've read maybe in adulthood, I have to say. It just sort of put things into a very different, interesting perspective. It came at a time when I was reading voraciously about slavery. Voracious book reading is, maybe 10 books over a period of a year. I don't read a lot of books, unfortunately. But when I get interested in a subject and want to really, soak it up, that's what I do. And Ms. Stahl is a black man and a lawyer and incredibly eloquent. And he doesn't really bullshit a lot. He just gets right to it. And if you want to read it, I highly recommend it. I've bought copies of that book for a lot of people. And I don't know a single person that I've recommended it to that ever comes back to me and says, well, I don't see why you recommended that book. His chapter, it's broken down into chapters, and he talks about basically every aspect of America that is subject to the courts, where the courts play a very big role in regulating it. And slavery, since it's understandable, is a very big topic in this. And it's not just a big topic because of who he is, but it's a big topic in anything that you want. If you ever want to look at what formed the legal system of the United States, it wasn't done until after the Civil War, because there was this whole slew of amendments that came that basically guaranteed all the rights that we all have. The Bill of Rights didn't cover everything, and you can see it in the the new amendments, the post-Civil War amendments of the to the Constitution. And if you're looking for a contribution for African Americans in the United States, look no further. I mean, you know, obviously there's the cultural and creative aspects of their contributions, but this is important. I first got tipped off on this by the 1619 Project, which was also very eye-opener, a real eye-opener for me. And then Black Lives Matter. This is what got me interested in all this stuff. But it was the idea that that the abolition of slavery and how the United States redefined itself in that moment was that it was so important, made me really want to understand exactly what was going on and what happened. And I have to say that I was educated in the public schools of New York and all the way through college, not through college, but through my first year in college. And we didn't get much of a picture of slavery or, honestly, we didn't get much of anything about the history of the Constitution. How we got to where we are wasn't a really big topic. We memorized a lot of dates. And then for college, I went to Tulane University in New Orleans, and which is a fairly liberal city considering what part of the country it's in. And this was in the mid-70s, and they were still living the aftermath of slavery. Jim Crow was still alive in New Orleans in those days. I think it probably still is to this day, but I can't vouch for that. Last time I was in New Orleans was in the post, the aftermath of Katrina. I had been there a couple of times since college, but I wanted to go especially at that point because first of all, I knew the city, so I could understand the before and after. I live in the mountains, by the way, if you didn't know that. And the generator outside just kicked on. But I think it's just testing itself. I think that's all that is. What it means in when it's not testing itself is that that we are having an outage. But I seriously do not believe we're having an outage at this point. It's an absolutely phenomenally gorgeous day today. It's like, well, let me just leave it at that. The best chapter in the Allow Me to Retort book by Ulema Stahl is the one on abortion. And that's another topic that I haven't spent a lot of time learning about or thinking about. I thought about it enough to decide that it isn't my decision. And that it's, that if anybody, regardless of gender, thinks about it. Let me just say, take your gender out of it, and then just look at the physics of abortion, and realize that there are two sides to it. Okay, it's not a completely one-sided thing. So I think you have to. I feel that I have to at first say that to accept that. It's not an absolutely clear-cut thing as to when life begins. It's a fairly arbitrary thing because we don't even know what life is, so how the hell could we possibly know when it begins? We don't know. I mean, I could talk for hours. We would have a very interesting conversation if you really wanted to explore this as to why we have no idea what life is, and therefore, of course, if we don't know what life is, how are we qualified to even decide or even discuss in an intelligent way as to when, at what moment it begins? It's like, so anyway. But my thinking as a man was that it's complicated. Let's say it's so complicated you can't come to a conclusion about whether it's right or wrong. But since you can't come to a conclusion about it, then you should say, okay, we haven't, then you don't outlaw things that you don't have conclusions about. Let's put it, make it really simple, okay? You can't outlaw it. If you don't know whether it's right or wrong, how can you outlaw it? Because I'll tell you one thing, and then this is where Mistel picks up and blows my mind. Because what he talks, he creates an analogy. I think this came from his book. I just reread it somewhere and in some of my own writing. I'm not sure whether it came from his book or not, but it belongs in the same story. But suppose you're standing on a bus stop waiting for a bus to come, and a cop car pulls up and says, "We have to take your body." And you say, "Well, excuse me, but you can't take my body. This is my body." And says, "No, there's a guy at the hospital right now who needs a kidney, and he has a right to live. And your kidney matches his. So what we're doing now is we're taking control of your body so this other person can live. So there's no lack of clarity about the morality of that, right? I mean, no, you can't have my kidney. I mean, I feel for the guy, but I don't even know him. And aside from that, I'm not in a position to give you my kidney. I like my kidney. I have two of them and I want to keep both of them." You don't have a hard time with that, right? Well, then why do you force a person to give over their body to another person who has a right to live, you've decided, and you've also decided this is actually a person? So you can accept all of the premises of the anti-abortion people and still prove that it is absolutely wrong to force somebody to carry a baby that they don't want. No, never mind that whether they want the baby or not, that isn't even the question. They don't want the body of theirs. It's even hard to formulate the words for this. The only way to explain it is that you've decided that the woman's body does not belong to her. It belongs to the state, and the state will decide what she does with her body. I can't explain it as well as Ms. Dahl does, but that's about as close as I can get to it. He does it so much better. And if you really want to, I begged him. I got in touch with him through Twitter, and I think I had an intro. I forget who I asked. And we actually had a brief conversation over direct message in Twitter. And I said, this was, I believe it was when there was a period where the decision had been leaked but had not yet been announced. And it was a period of a couple of months. And so all of a sudden, everybody's talking about abortion. Everybody can't believe that they're actually going to do this. I mean, there had been an episode of the Daily Podcast before I realized the New York Times was completely sold out. There was an episode of the Daily Podcast where they went through the reasons why the court could never overturn Roe v. Wade. I haven't forgotten that. It's like, no, of course they can't, but they did. You know, the New York Times is very often wrong about things like that. And they never go back and revisit. It's like, remember when we said that, you know, it couldn't happen? Well, we have to say we were wrong about that. And we'll try to do better next time. But hold.